Beyond Athletic, Episode 2.
I had to decide whether I want to continue staying with national team that summer and try to make Olympic team or accept my green card and move to America. And at that time, it was the hardest decision, and nobody wanted to make that decision for me.
You might be smarter. Your daddy might own a company, but you will not outwork me.
This one right here is for the people.
I'm your host, Ryan J. Owens, current pro athlete, entrepreneur, and former USA national team volleyball player. I will not be defined by my athleticism alone, but I've learned how to leverage it to stay passionate about it and prepare for life. That's why the Beyond Athletic podcast was born. I'll bring you case studies of current and former elite athletes making it happen in life, as well as tips and lessons from top sources in sports, nutrition, fitness, entrepreneurship, and more. I'm here to tell you that you are beyond athletic. Hey everyone, thanks for listening. This is episode 2 with Sonia Tomasevich, now coaching at University of Miami. Before we get into the show, I just want to warn you there is a little reverb. So you'll hear some of the audio come back. That's because of the delay. We did the interview from Serbia to Miami via the internet, and the audio equipment isn't so great. I'm just recording off my laptop. So this is another reason why on Indiegogo, I have a campaign for Beyond Athletic just to raise funds to cover the cost of hosting and the audio equipment to make this a great show and actually get someone to do the audio instead of me, an audio engineer. So if you want to support, please go to igg.me/@beyondathletic and donate even a couple bucks. It doesn't matter. If you can't donate, share it with a friend, let people know about it. It talks about the show on there, and I'm going to post some of the episodes because before it had just some previews. So without any further ado, you're going to hear a great show. Sonia is a very wise person already, and she is a very great and humble person. So enjoy. So today on the show, we've got Sonia Tomasevich from Serbia. How are you doing?
Hey, Ryan. I'm doing good. How are you?
Enjoying Serbia while you enjoy my country.
Nice little switch we got going on. Nice little switch
Yeah, I love it. You're in Miami. I'm in Belgrade. It's a little bit weird.
I'll trade
but
you.
But it's all good. I enjoy it. Yeah, I'll trade you too. Shoot, I could use some sunshine. Anyway, so Sonia, just to go through a little bit about you, you went to University of Washington and did pretty darn well there. I'll let you talk a little bit about that. But you also, from there, you went on to play in Bayamón in Puerto Rico. And then from there, jumped around a little bit, Korea, Switzerland, bunch of places. I think you hit up, where was after Switzerland? Greece? Is that when we saw each other in Greece?
Yep, that sounds about right. We met in Greece. I played there for 2 years. I don't know. Were you there for 2 years too?
I was there for two years, but I think we only overlapped for one of them. Yeah, we overlapped for 2009, 2010, your last year.
Okay.
I think so. Anyways, you moved on from there. I think you did Baku, Forli, and then ended up with, what was it,
Casa Maggiore.
I'm bad with Italian. Yeah, Casa Maggiore. I wish I could speak Italian. I love Italian. So anyways, that's a little bit about your kind of amateur and then pro career. But what I don't have a ton of information on is your national team career. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn it over to you and let you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, how you got started, and just highlight from the national team part since we've already gotten into the amateur and pro.
I played for a small city, a small town in Serbia, Prijepolje, where some of the best coaches and teams in Serbia saw me. At that time, Jedin Stojica was the best team. They wanted my sister and I to come and train there with them, and so we can go and play for national team.
Which is, by the way, your hometown.
Prijepolje is where I was born and raised for 15 years. And then Užice is where my family moved to after we got invited to go and train with this team.
Awesome.
Because they were the best team in the country, and they had the best coach, Darko Zakoc, coaching them. So he wanted us. And
I'm gonna break you up for just 1 second, though. You say like best team, but honestly, when I talk to people here and they start talking about your time there and all the great players that have come out of basically that region, I mean, it's incredible. So you were part of pretty much like this whole wave of just an incredible amount of talent that now is at the top in the world, really. So that's awesome.
I think they did a great job training young kids in that region. I mean, Belgrade, given like Red Star and Vizura now, like there are always a couple teams in Belgrade, beginning with Red Star, that are, they always have really good schools for young kids. But Užice was actually really good at that time, and especially when Darko Zakoc was a coach there. Obviously, he takes his talents everywhere, so now he's doing the same thing with Vizura. But, you know, I mean, I would say that Serbia in general is very good in most team sports, just girls and boys. And the kids get really passionate and interested in one thing, you know, they don't get burned out like American kids do. So they stick with a sport, and they train 5 days, 6 days, 6 days a week. Playing one sport will get you pretty good at it. So.
Yeah. From there, what happened?
So I played got invited to youth national team when I was 15. Played for them, then got invited to junior national team. Played for junior national team for 3 years. Played for senior national team. Wanted to go to America. We went to when I was with junior national team, we were in Canada playing in a world championship, and I kind of liked it, and I wanted to go to America, and I liked, you know, there were a lot of American coaches there watching it, and we got invited. Like, actually my first offer ever was from USC, and I got interested. Well, that was the year when the war
started
in Serbia.
Yeah,
that was the year actually when the war started in Serbia, 99. I was 19 years old, and I grew, and that was my last year in high school. So instead of graduating in June, they shut the schools and everything down in March, and you know, we were pretty much considered, those are the grades we got in March, that's what we got to go with at the end. American embassy was closed, we couldn't take SAT and all that good stuff later on. I played for national team still for next 2 years, took SAT, and went to America.
Awesome.
Then played for national team again in 2008 for the qualifiers for the Olympic Games in Beijing.
What were the results in that?
We won. We qualified. So that was our last qualifier. And a lot of outside hitters. Jelena Nikolic was injured. Brigitka Molnar had a shoulder surgery. Anja Spasovic was already out of national team. So they needed outside hitters. Terzic invited me, talked to me and explained to me the situation. They needed outside hitters. So I was like, okay. I mean, I always loved and enjoyed playing for national team. Loved hanging out with those girls. Played with them one more time. And then as we were there, we got qualified for Olympic Games. And then I found out I got a green card about the same time. So I had to decide whether I want to continue staying with national team that summer and try to make Olympic team, or accept my green card and move to America.
And I think we know the rest of that story.
And I think that's probably the best decision I've ever made in my life. But at that time, it was the hardest decision. And nobody wanted to make that decision for me. You know, whoever I talked to, everybody was like, you know, that's a decision you're going to have to make on your own. And I'm like, oh, somebody help.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get more into that whole scenario a bit. And so after you graduated, what happened then? To lead you to now?
When I graduated
you played pro a bunch and you decided all of a sudden, okay, I'm going to finish. What kind of led you to that decision?
I My whole life, I kept hearing from my teammates, from my old coaches, everybody, one day you're going to be a great coach. And I remember going like, what? I don't want to coach like ever. What's wrong with you people? Like, no, not happening. And as the years went by and I was 32 when I stopped playing. My last season of playing pro literally was pushed. Like, I was ready to be done the year before that, right after Forlì. I was ready, you know, mentally I was kind of like, you know, it's time to hang it up. And I've done all I wanted to do playing volleyball. I mean, I kept waiting for something to keep me out of sport, like getting injured. But nothing like that was happening. Mm-hmm. Like, I was never getting any, like, serious injuries or anything that would keep me away from playing volleyball. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to have to decide on my own, you know, that I'm just done.
Yeah.
And honestly, I was scared of, I'm going to be this, like, 35-year-old woman moving to America and saying, like, hey, everybody, I want to get a job. I don't have any working experience, including I don't have, like, a day of working for Starbucks or whatever. So who wants to hire me? Here I am. Like, I was worried about that. Only to find out that people love hiring professional athletes and athletes, period. They just, apparently that's like a new thing right now. Everybody loves athletes.
That's the end thing.
Yeah, so I decided to be done after Casal Maggiore. About in February that year, I started interviewing for the jobs in America. Jared Elliott from the University of Texas, a good friend of mine. He was with a team in Italy. We met up. He asked me some questions about where I want to go, what I want to do, and he actually helped me get this job in San Antonio. Then from there, I mean, we had pretty good success in a year and a half that I was there. And now they're continuing with that success. They have a really good team. I love coaching. I think this is what I'm literally happy to go to work every day. I'm just glad that volleyball is still in my life. There was a part of me that I was like, what am I going to do if there's no volleyball in my life? You know, if I wake up and I've been playing volleyball since I was 9 to 32.
Oh, totally.
So, wow. And you know how it is in America when you have 9-to-5 job, you know, I know I could probably go twice a week and play recreational volleyball, but that's not it. You know, it would just feel weird.
Mm-hmm. It would just feel weird.
And I wanted to try coaching. Coaching doesn't pay nearly as good as some other things I could be doing here as far as, like, you know, my career. But I love it. Like, I love helping these girls. I love you know, giving them a chance to do what I did. And I just feel like in that way, I'm giving back to, I feel so blessed from what happened in my life at volleyball. And I just hope if I, in each class, if I have one player going playing pro after college, I feel like I've done what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah. So, adding value is really important. I think that's a really big topic with everything that's going on in my life right now. I see that just these opportunities where we get at some point as we've been growing up, it's like the more I feel like I can give back, especially to people in my sport, but okay, any sport, and that's the basis of this podcast. I just feel like it's really rewarding. It's a really awesome experience. So.
It's awesome.
I can feel you on that one.
And, you know, like, I would, as far as, like, coaching goes, it's weird feeling because my first year coaching was so stressful. And second one didn't get any better. I mean, I feel like it's like, for, I don't have control. Like, Ryan, it's so weird. You don't have any control. You can say whatever you want to tell to your players. You can tell them, do this. And, you know, this is going to work. And I've been in that position, like, 1,000 times in my life. And you tell them what to do, and that's all you can do. And then it's up to them to do it or not. And it's so stressful.
Yeah.
But, you know, my first year, we went to semifinals of a conference championship. Had 14-11 in fifth set. And I told our stud outside hitter, do this. We had 2 match points for her to, like, get, I mean, she had 2 match points herself. And she didn't listen. She did what she wanted to do. And it was like, I reiterated twice what she needs to do. And she told me, I know, I'll do it. And she went back on the court and did what she did first time. And we lost in semifinals. And it was like, oh my God. Oh my god. This is so weird. So I didn't say anything to her after the game. Like, I didn't want to rub it in her face or anything. You know, it's just the worst thing you can do. But at some point, like a couple months later in the spring, she comes over to my office, sits down, and she goes, "I'm sorry." And I was like, "Well, what are you sorry for?" She goes, "I don't know why I didn't listen to you." So she said, "From now on, whatever you tell me to do, I'm going to listen." I'm like, "All right, let's do it."
So hindsight is always 20/20.
Yeah, it's
that's a beautiful thing. That's a beautiful thing about failures, though. You know, you can learn from them, and that's actually one thing I'd love to ask you about. You definitely didn't fail, though, when you decided to go to a USA school. What made you even consider that, and how did you make that happen?
Well, I was pretty good growing up in Serbia. You know, I was one of those talented kids that everybody was talking about. And then I got injured, and it was like something minuscule. Like, they had to shave off part of my cartilage in my left knee. I was off the court for 2 weeks. Third week, I was already on the court playing libero, and fourth week I was playing. And in those 3-4 weeks, I felt like I literally saw like a glimpse of what my life would be like if I got, you know, if I was a superstar, I got injured, and then everybody forgot about me. Like, for going from, I was playing at that point in Belgrade, and going from I was captain on the team, we were winning, we were really good. Everybody calling me, I was doing interviews like 2-3 times a week. It was awesome. And then I got injured, and nobody called me to ask me how I was doing. Nobody called me to see, you know, if I made it through a surgery. You know, it's like the only people I had in my life at that time were my family and our trainer. That's it. Not even coaches. Nobody. First phone call I received was to ask when am I coming back on a court, and this was like 2 weeks later. And I was like, wow. So this is what it would look like if I, God forbid, got injured something bad, like, you know, my spine or, you know, knee blue, like career-ending injury. This is what it would look like. So it kind of made me aware of, you know, I was always a good student, but it definitely made me realize, you know, I definitely want to go to America.
Yeah, that's actually a common issue I've seen here in the past 3 years that I've been coming to Serbia. And it really makes me sad that the focus is very often on just the result for the teams here. And you, as student athletes, really don't have too many options. It's either you play that sport and do well and continue on to go pro, or you stay in school and you don't go play sport. And so that's like this really, really hard road.
It's getting worse too. Like, I mean, I know that they're asking now kids to go, like, don't not to go to school like every day, just kind of like to take exams and go vandal. No, I don't even know how to say that in English, because it's like homeschool. I mean, it's they're asking these freshmen, sophomores, juniors to quit high school and just take exams on their own. In the meantime, nobody is homeschooling them. It's not like, you know, in America when you're homeschooling your kids and you're actually putting time in it. These kids are, most of the time, these kids are away from their families, expected to homeschool themselves.
And such a shame. It really is. Because you have one of the best talent pools in the world, top three, especially if you look at the numbers of how many players go play pro. Serbia's top three in the world. And so
for
could
such
you
a
just
small
imagine
country.
If... Yeah, for a tiny country. And could you imagine if all of them were getting great education so that when they're done with pro, what are they going to do? Players aren't really going to have the option to go get great jobs in, for instance, the States if they don't have any connection to it, and they're not going to have that option for that job security here either. So
yeah,
I guess that leads me to go ahead.
Yeah, my sister was actually it's for us. It's interesting because there's two of us and kind of we're 15 months apart, and we both had opportunity to go to America. She decided not to. She was going the same. She had the same mentality that most of those kids have back home right now. When I talk to them, I'm going to be professional player. I'm going to make all kinds of money, because here these agents come around and they tell them all these stories about all these hundreds of thousands of euros they're going to make. And you're like, honey, you're not going to make that much money. Like, you know, I'm sorry, but stop buying into that. But, the agents, they know what they're doing. So they're going and giving them a story. which makes me mad about these agencies. Like, and I talk to them all the time about this stuff. Why do you do that? Like, you can have them at 22 when they're done with college. That's still at least 10 more years of pro career. Like, why you, you know, send them to go get some degree, get education, come to America, learn English, speak English like, you know, close to like you speak Serbian. So it makes me so sad. And my sister, she decided not to go. And when she, you know, as we were getting older, she asked me, she goes, why didn't you slap me across my face and told me that I have to go? And I was like, yeah, anybody that knows you knows that that wouldn't be an option, slapping you. But now she's mother of two kids and she's going to university. And, you know, and it's not even like anything like any major university or anything like that. It's like one of those schools in Serbia that, you know, I mean, they're getting degrees from there, but it's nothing like American degree. And she's like, if I was only smart back then, you know. And so now we have a 14-year-old sister. And she's saw it both ways, and she's like, since she started playing volleyball, she's like, I'm going to America.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. I mean, that opportunity afforded you, I think, a ton. And that's what I guess I have to ask you now. It just makes sense. How did that work out for you? I mean, what benefits did you see from going to school in America versus staying in Serbia?
Well, for once, I graduated from a big university. University of Washington is a great institution. It's one of the top schools in America. And the education there, it's for over 4 years, it would be like $250,000. So when people tell me I wasn't making money at that time, I was making a lot more than most of them made and investing in my future at the same time. I got really lucky and blessed with the fact that I had a really good coach at university. And I got actually a lot better, which I thought it wasn't gonna be possible in America, because you always hear these horror stories how volleyball in America sucks. And I was ready for that. I was ready to come to America and actually be done playing volleyball, but at least I was gonna get a degree. And then, you know, I lucked out. I got a lot better, and we won national championship. Just kind of everything aligned for me, and it opened a lot of doors afterwards. I mean, after my first big contract, so after when I went to Korea, I signed for a lot more money than my sister did the same year in Russia. And she's like, hold up, how does this make sense? Like, I played for Serbia national team. I was the best server in Champions League. I was playing for Tenerife, which was big time at that time. And you come out of college, allegedly, where you were, you know, not getting better, and you signed better contract than I did. I'm like, oh, I don't know. I mean, I guess it's not that bad after all. You know? But what makes me mad about Serbian perception of American volleyball is that they all think, and this is, again, people, coaches, mentors to these young kids who tell them the volleyball is bad here. But my first question to people when they say that is, who is the one of the top powerhouses in volleyball in the world? America is. American national team is always, they're always in the finals in Olympic Games. Who do you think plays for American
national team? That's right.
Who plays for American national team? Serbians? I mean, like, so I just wish these people would give more credit where it's due, you know?
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I mean, it's so great to have those opportunities and, like you said, to be blessed with those. But I think it also says a lot about you as a person, because not only did you take this huge chance and pretty scary trip, I would think, moving halfway around the world, but you didn't know what was coming. You prepared mentally for anything, and then you kind of just rode with it. And given the right tools, I think, because I definitely know the situation in American colleges as compared to outside of America are pretty awesome. There's most of my pro teams don't even come close to even my community college during college.
Are you kidding me?
Our facilities and resources. It's nuts.
Yeah.
So awesome.
We just had a trainer from Italian team. Come to just kind of, he was going to some course here in Miami. Mm-hmm. And so he asked me if he can come and observe our practices and kind of visit our training room and hang out with our trainer, physio. And so I, you know, I asked him, and Miami approved of it. And the guy came in and he said that our training room facility, he's never seen anything like that, not even in soccer in Italy. And we know what soccer is in Italy. So,
wow.
I mean, wow. I can't. And you know that, like, the kids come here and they look at it and they go like, wait a minute. So what are you saying? Like, I can have as many Nike shoes as I want to? Yeah, you're not going to have to play in one pair of shoes whole season every day. Like, you can get as many as you want.
The little things that are actually so big.
I know. It's like, I just remember going, like, you know, in college, I would just break into my new pair of shoes. Then our equipment lady would come around and go, Sanya, your shoe is broken. Like, you need a new shoe. And it's because when I was falling down, I would always scrape my shoe on one part. And it always looked like it was like I needed a new pair, but I really didn't. I just broke them in. And I'm like, please stop making me get new shoes every month. I love my shoes. So,
whereas some people are like, please give me new shoes. Here's Sanya Tomasevich in America, like, stop giving me shoes.
Please stop making me wear, because you just break them in. And she's like, oh my God, you need a new pair of shoes. I'm like, golly, this woman. Yeah. Shoe Nazi.
So we talked a little bit about now your successes, especially in a great decision on going there. And also, I just want to say really quick, I think that's really awesome that your sister is going back to school. And even though it won't be as great as what she could have done in America, both you and her as a mother and as an aunt, especially for your niece, are excellent examples. And not only that, but your younger sister. So what I do want to know is, what was your biggest failure in that could be in volleyball or in life, and how did you recover from that and move on?
Well, we can talk about many matches we lost, but one that I will never forget is the semifinals of the national championship in my junior year in college. We lost Stanford in 4, and I sucked. I was so bad that night, and I felt like me being that bad made my teammates kind of like, because they were looking up to me and they were waiting for me to get them going, because it wasn't first time that we were all bad and then I would recover. And that night, nothing could change that. And that same summer, I went home for like 3 weeks and I didn't work out. I didn't do anything that I was expected to do. And I felt like, you know, nobody's going to know. I'm just going to go back and I'm going to be good and it's all going to be okay. And that day when we lost and I was sitting at a press conference, and I will never forget, you know, I wish I could have, like, when they asked me if I have any regrets or if I've would have done anything different, I wish I could have said no, I did all I could. And all I kept thinking about were those 3 weeks. And I didn't say it to press conference, to media at that time, but I went to my locker room, to our locker room, and I told my teammates that I apologized. And I said, you know, I'm sorry, I failed you. You know, I feel like if I worked out those 3 weeks, things would be different tonight. And some other people came up forward and they said the same thing. And then our season started next morning. We all dedicated ourselves 100%. There was no day or an hour off that I took from thinking about national championship, and we won it next year, so it was a great feeling. But
yeah, they do say, I mean, and it's proved time and time again, that some of our greatest failures lead to some of our greatest successes. So I think that's a great example of that.
Well, one of my favorite, actually, quotes you asked earlier, and I, you know, I couldn't think off the top of my head like exactly how it goes, but now I found it here in my journal. It goes, sometimes when I consider what tremendous consequences come from the little things, I'm tempted to think there are no little things. Ooh. And it's from Bruce Barton.
I like
that. And it's one of my favorite quotes. And, you know, there's so many times that I used to say this to my friends. I used to say this to my boyfriends. You know, just like I would tell this to in anything in life you can apply this to. You know, there are no little things in anything we do. And, you know, everything matters.
Very, very, very great quote. I love that. I'm actually going to adopt that. So that's one of the reasons why I love asking, because you can never have too many basically real life lessons, because these quotes come out of things that actually happen. So, and so now we've talked about one of your biggest failures and how you reacted, obviously winning a national championship. I'd like to ask if you had one single like moment in your career where, for instance, you struggled with learning, you know, whether it could be reception, defense, anything, or how you should react if you're being coached in a certain way. If there is any single aha moment for you in volleyball, what was that?
Actually, there was a huge, it wasn't just like a moment, it was a period of time. And after my freshman year, my first spring in college, my coaches asked me to pretty much change a lot of things about my my game. Mm-hmm. And it bothered me. I was like, wait a minute, I thought you guys thought I was good. That's why you brought me here. And they're like, no, we do think you're good, but what if you can be great? And I'm like, well, yeah, sure. They're like, I mean, we think you can be great. Do you want to be great? I'm like, yeah. So they're like, okay, all we're asking is give us 3-4 months this spring to work with you and, you know, see what happens. And during those three, you know, I said, okay, sure. Well, during those 3-4 months, it wasn't easy. There were ups and downs, and you know how things, before they get better, they get worse. They get a lot worse.
For sure.
So there was a time when I couldn't pass the ball because I was doing it their way. There were times where I couldn't hit the ball over the net because I was doing it their way. And then the second it all clicked, it was like, oh my God. So they taught in college where I played, they taught gold medal square. And that moment, that spring, and my college team going from there, like we just added a setter next year to our whole team. Nothing else had changed. We went from being in top 32 teams in a country. We went to top 8 teams in a country. And wow. I mean, I just saw a huge difference in my game and my teammates' game, and just everything improved. And it was like, aha, spring. That was for me. Like, it wasn't like, and from that moment on, I am, for me, like, that's a religion. I believe 100% in what we do, and that's what I'm teaching now as a coach. That's what I implemented when I played pro. As a matter of fact, passing systems wherever I played, at the end of the year, my team that I played for, we were doing the same passing systems we did in college.
Oh, wow. You know, that actually reminds me, and it's funny that you mentioned gold medal squared, because one of my biggest aha moments was when I was training with the USA national team being coached by Hugh McCutcheon. Uh-huh. Who is obviously one of these big names with gold medal squared. And he goes, I mean, we're frustrated. We're going through the same thing like you. I mean, he was teaching Olympic level volleyball players basics of volleyball. Like, I mean, you know, hey,
wrist
no,
and hands, straight
your
and
thumbs,
simple.
Yeah, your thumbs got to be like this, you know, hands and wrists, straight and simple, angle, blah, blah, blah. And we're going through these drills. And he goes, and people are obviously getting frustrated. And he goes, listen. In order to get, you know, great results, you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable. And that stuck with me for the rest of my career until now. Every time things are comfortable, I'm always just like, no, no, no. Something's not right. Something's not right. Mm-hmm. I gotta push the envelope. So I think that was a huge, you could definitely relate to that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's actually, I didn't hear that quote. I didn't hear quote, get comfortable with uncomfortable. Till I started coaching, and then somebody, like one of my friends, just, you know, as kind of, they send me cards when I got a job and whatnot. And somebody said, keep in mind, one of the coaches, keep in mind, you're going to be great coach when you find a way to make your players okay with getting comfortable with uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I love that. Like, that is so true. And like you said, you know, you just, I never knew about that quote before, but I felt like that my whole life. Yeah. You know, if something was really comfortable, like it just, something is off. Like, I'm settling in. This is not good. I'm not getting better. My coach in college used to say, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. You never stay the same.
Yeah. I like that. And I think when I look back on my career and I wonder, because I mean, that happened to me in 2005. And I just wish that happened to me when I started volleyball, because I could just imagine the steps I could have taken before that. And if I think any players listening to this could take away one thing from what Sonia just said, is that really you always have to push yourself. You can never stay idle. You can never just kind of get comfortable and take 3 weeks off and everything's going to be okay. No, you've got to stay on it. You've got to do things when people are not watching. And that's really important.
And, you know, like at the end of the day, when everything is said and done, and, you know, and you're not going to win every game. And I think I've learned a lot more in my life from losses than I've learned from wins. But when you lose that game and when you lose championships or whatnot, like you want to look back and say, you know what? There's nothing that I could have done different. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, I might have passed better, but I wanted to pass better that game, or I wanted to hit better. That's not an issue. Like my preparation that led to that game could have, like my attitude in the game, could I have done any different? Mm-hmm. If your answer is no, then you've done everything you could. Now, if your answer is yes, then you go and work on that. And then, you know, next time you won't have to have that discussion with yourself. And I think the hardest discussions and the hardest arguments I get is with myself. Like, you know, I'm my toughest crowd, and
and
I think that's how it should be, you know. And I really think that if I wasn't like that, I wouldn't have a career that I had as a player or as a coach now. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still early, but thus far it's been pretty good.
Definitely good advice, and definitely some lessons to be learned there. I think one thing I'm really interested in hearing from you is because I kind of want to segue here into your coaching career now, because I mean, that's a big switch from being a player to a coach, because I mean, it gives you such a different perspective in the sport. But my question for you is, you as a player, you probably had some rituals, something that you did, whether it was like a daily ritual or it was like an in training or in matches ritual. Is there one or two that stand out that you think could be helpful?
Well, I didn't start doing this till later in my career, but I advise for every young player to start just writing things down in their journal. And I know it sounds so lame right now to write journals, because I don't even know if anybody's writing them anymore.
Hey, listen, I meditate every morning. I wake up, I do that, and then I journal. So I'm going to put it out there for all men who want to judge. I journal twice a day. So I think journaling is something that is fantastic. So go ahead.
I think if you journal things, and like the way how I always tell my players, and I actually, we buy them as a program, we buy them like little journal books where they can write things down before practices, where they write how they feel, you know, what they ate, and you know, what just anything that led to the practice. And then after practice, the same feeling. But after a certain amount of time, you catch the pattern after good practices and after bad, before good practices and before bad practices, there's a pattern. And there, I caught a pattern on things that disturbed me, and I affected my practice or automatically affected my performance in the games. So, you know, just kind of over time, I started eliminating that and started focusing on what's making better in practice, starting doing things that actually I had good practices after those things. So, you know, I was a little OCD with that. Like, I went as far as, like, I had the same meal, like, the same exact meal every single day before the practice. You know? So I am very, like, superstitious, and, like, I guess, you know, like, I feel like I'll do things that I can control. Mm-hmm. Anything that, you know, I believe in life, there are things that you can control, things that you can somewhat control, and things that you have no control over. And those things bother me the most. But in order for those not to bother me as much, I try to do the control, the part that I can control, and I make sure I do that.
And what's like a good example of something you did? Like, for instance, before I go to serve, there's a certain amount of number of times I bounce the ball. There's a way the ball has to be, you know, it has to look before I start bouncing it. Then I got to spin it a certain way. So did you have anything like that?
Yeah, I started, my favorite number is 3. And so when I go back to serve, I'll bounce the ball 3 times. I would have never told you this, by the way, when I played.
Yeah. Awesome.
So now I'm telling you this, like, this is probably the first time I'm talking to somebody like on the air or like that's going to go. But bounce the ball 3 times. And then if I get to serve next time, I'll go 4 times. If I serve next time, 5 times. If anybody takes time out, I go back to 3.
Yeah.
From the beginning. If I get an ace, I go back to 3. So if there's any kind of, or sub, I'll get back to 3. So if there's any kind of disturbing in between, I'll go back to 3. But if not, there were times where I would bounce the ball 9, 10 times, and I'd be like, oh my God, am I going to make it in 8 seconds?
Yeah. You're like a couple inches off the ground, bouncing the ball super fast.
And I always like to make an eye contact with the passer on the other side, and they hated it. Because I was serving from a zone one and five, six and five, so I would move around.
Yeah.
And I always studied my passers before the game, so I would watch film on them before the games. If Ryan liked to, if you like to serve, receive the ball down the line, I will definitely not serve it down the line. I'll serve cross court to you, and so on. And so, if there's somebody that hated down the line serve, you know, I'll give her a stare, and I'll, as I'm walking, I'm still staring at her and bouncing the ball. Like, so
it just, mental games.
It would just get like very, and you know, serve receive is all mental.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day.
Yes. I'm learning that in a big way, and it's finally starting to click. I got to tell you, moving to outside hitter was one of the biggest challenges, but I do love it. So speaking of like positions and players, if you were, now that you've played for so long and now you're coaching, if you were to build like a player, as in like this player was obviously the athletically they could play, all that kind of stuff. Put that aside. If you could just build like a player who was coachable and who you could just like mold, what would that player look like?
Like you're talking about physically or mentally?
Mentally, exactly. Like how would you build that player so that they would respond to basically how you're training them?
Well, it's just like, you know, you and I, we just talked about it, being comfortable with uncomfortable. Somebody who, you know, somebody who like wants, what I do, I make checklists for my players, whether it's hitting, passing, whatever it is. So it's kind of like when they accomplish something. So like they get wrist and hands together, you know, they get that part down. So once I stop telling them wrist and hands, they know they got it down. So they can go check, you know, like done, what's next? And they go, okay, straight and simple now. So they keep on moving down the list. And it's like, I feel like once they get to the bottom of the list, my favorite players, when they get to the bottom of the list, they come back to me and they go, what do you want me to do next?
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it's like, oh my God, that's like heaven for every coach's ears. Like this kid really wants to get better. It's not all about just doing it to do it. They really want to get better. And, you know, honestly, usually those are the kids that end up on a high level. Those are the kids that go play for Olympic teams. Those are the kids that, you know, play for national teams, play pro. And it's pretty neat to see. And then, you know, usually those are the people that go far in life, period, because they never settle in.
I definitely like to just recap on that is basically anybody that's listening, if you want to go play at University of Miami for Sonny Tomasevich and her coaching staff, This is key. You gotta be somebody who's proactive and that doesn't just respond to what they're given, but thinks outside the box and like, what else can I do? And that hunger can push you really far, not just, you know, in your volleyball career, but life. So that's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Now a little bit about your coaching. What's been your greatest challenge so far as a coach?
Just learning that I have no control. And then my first head coach that I worked for, I remember coaching kids and I remember going like, oh my God, I told her like 10 times to do that. Why can't she do it?
Yeah.
And she'll go, Sonia, like she doesn't get what you're saying. And I was like, what do you mean she doesn't get it? It's common sense. She's like, no, it's a common sense for you. You're 32 year old. Like it's not a common sense for 18 year old that never like played this level of volleyball. So you just assume when you're coaching them, just assume they've never heard anything like that before. You just have to really dumb it down. Like, because they are young. So for you, I guess for me, just taking it down, like the level of play, I really have to dumb it down is really bad way of saying it, but kind of like make it really simple and assume that they don't know anything when I'm trying to explain to them what they need to do. And now I do it with some players that are advanced and they kind of look at me like, really, Sonia, like, really? Like, I'm like, hey, I would rather you have that issue with me than look at me like I'm speaking Japanese.
But once again, you have to remind yourself and they should remind themselves. I think that'd be great to have on your board as a mantra. There are no little things.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, you got to, you got to repeat it. And I think that's a good takeaway for not only coaches, that you've got to really keep things simple and be able to go over them, but also for players. Hey, you might hear this over and over and again, but that just means it's super important and you got to keep it on your mind. So.
Yeah, well, I'm gonna share this with you. Like my first moment as a coach, where obviously my first year when I told the player to do something and she didn't, and it was like, oh my God, like I literally have no control. This sucks. And then second year with the same team, same players, everything. So now we want a conference. We want a conference tournament. We're going to NCAA tournament. And you know, you've been here. So NCAA tournament is different animal. Like each round is different animal. Like it's, you know, it's one thing going from first to second round, but it's completely different making it to Elite Eight or Final Four. Like,
yeah,
it everything changes. So we made it to the NCAA tournament. So we're in top 64 teams. We're, you know, warming up. And I just look at the players and I'm like, gosh, they have that bug. You know, they can't do it. And like, they're trying so hard to do everything we're teaching them. And all year round, we're trying to train them. Same is the same is the same. You know, you don't change what you do, like, you know, based on the environment around you. We're doing the same things from the beginning of the year, blah, blah, blah. And they just couldn't do it. And they were choking in the warm-up. Like, the net was the biggest enemy. Like, and Texas A&M didn't even have to come out. I mean, we were choking ourselves. Yeah. So I told my other two coaches who were, both of them were older, like in their 50s. And I said, you guys are choking. And they're like, what do you mean? And I was like, look, I mean, it's NCAA bug. They got it. They all got it. And I felt so nauseous. I actually had to run to the bathroom because I was so nauseous that I had no control over anything. And, you know, as a player, you come to a games like that. And I love playoffs. Like, that's one thing I miss about playing. I love playoffs. I love that bug that you learn how to control over time. Mm-hmm. And then you touch the ball and then that bug goes away. And you're like, yes, the feeling is awesome. Mm-hmm. And butterflies are, you know, there, but they're in a good way there. And, you know, you're playing volleyball and you're in comfort zone. And now as a coach, like, it never stops. You have that feeling and it's in your stomach and it doesn't go away and you have to fake it in front of your players that everything is great because you're if they see you freaking out, they're going to freak out 100%.
Yeah.
So it was so hard. Like, it was the hardest. I was like, so I talked to coaches, my friend coaches afterwards, and they all go, they laugh at me. They're like, he never stops. I'm like, what? No.
You're like, okay.
No, I need to come up with something that's going to stop this. I can't feel like this for the rest of my coaching career. Like, this sucks.
No, I think that's awesome. That's a great takeaway for everybody that basically when these things come up, these huge moments where basically the speed of everything changes, let's say, if you're going to give a reference like that, that you're going to get nervous. You're going to have sometimes some anxiety and whatever and these butterflies, but you got to push forward. And just once you get to that point where it's game time, it will go away. But you can't just kind of like worry about it. You got to just accept it, embrace it, and move forward.
So that's awesome. And then that's where your journal will help too. Like, you know, I'm already putting things down, you know, as far as like what was different that day. What did I do different, you know, as far as preparing myself and my team for the, you know, for the game. I mean, I'm not a head coach, but I have a certain position I'm training. So I'm training pin hitters and liberos. So, you know, as we know, passing is a huge part of the game. And so that's why I guess I felt a lot of pressure, but I felt that same pressure as a player. So now, I guess now as a coach, just the fact that I'm not the one passing, they're the ones passing the ball. So that's a part that I'm just trying to figure out, how am I going to make the best out of it? And, you know, just be confident in what's coming.
Awesome. Yeah. I really love coaching. I got to say that I respect what you're doing, and it's actually a huge job, and the best coaches really are prepared, and it sounds like you're doing a ton to be prepared, even though it sounds like right now you might be destroying your home.
Sorry, I'm opening the door.
No, it's all good. So what's the master plan for you? Are you going to keep coaching for a while? Are you interested in other things on the side while you're coaching? Like, what's going on?
I'm going to continue coaching. I'm hoping to stay in coaching. I don't know if it necessarily is going to be coaching. I got a couple plans that, actually a plan that I ran by some people here in States, and, it's, you know, I might have some investors coming through for it. It's something you and I can talk off the record, talk about.
Done. I think
it will go well. It will go well with what you're doing, and you're trying to help over there in that side of the world. So I feel like I can do something similar, not like that, but something where we can take these kids' talents to the next level.
Yeah, awesome. That's rad. And actually, just to give the listeners a little bit of background about what you're speaking about, what I'm up to, there's a program. It's not a shameless plug because it is an NGO, non-for-profit organization aimed at student athletes over here in the Balkans, and will be expanding globally, but basically creating a mentorship, tutorship, or tutoring, that's not even a word, tutorship, and showcase experience for these players to not only prepare them for athletics, but say to them, hey, this is a tool for you to learn how to live life, and this is going to apply to everything in your life, and athletics is important, but also your education and being prepared for the things that life's going to throw at you. Because if you travel abroad, you're going to be in situations you got to know how to handle. If you're making money, you need to know how to invest it. You need to know how to choose teams and all that. So that's what you're speaking of. And also, what's it like going over to America and playing? And so this is what I'm trying to do with you with this podcast, is also talk about that experience.
So one thing that I haven't mentioned, and I think the kids should know, and when I'm recruiting kids from Europe and any other part of the world, bringing them to America, it wasn't all peaches and cream and roses when I first got here. You know, it's a big cultural shock. You know, you're going to miss your family. Probably for 3 months, I went to sleep every night crying, and I'm very honest with everybody who comes to play for me. It's not going to be easy first couple months, mm-hmm. but it was about my sophomore year. I went home and I told my parents I want to live in America.
Awesome.
So like anything else, like I was very uncomfortable because, you know, I was in a new environment. I didn't speak the language. That's another thing that kids are concerned about. Like my English was horrible when I came to America, like really bad. And I ended up graduating from University of Washington with 3.5 GPA, which, it's not to brag about it.
That is a fantastic GPA for a student athlete. Anybody who's not even playing athletics to imagine. That's
but
awesome.
I didn't speak the language. So yeah. That just goes to say how much help we have as student athletes here.
Mm-hmm.
All the tutoring, all the ESL classes that I had to take. But, you know, at the end of the day, I graduated with a degree from the University of Washington. I speak English, and I
speak it well.
Won national championship. So
you did. You know, by the way, that reminds me. I never mentioned that. By the way, was it one time? More times? Was it four times? All American, right?
Yeah, I got two times All American. Actually, my junior year, I broke my hand, so I didn't have 66% of the games played. So.
Mm.
Yep, I didn't.
You're an All American that year in my book. Don't worry.
Well, I guess apparently I was All-American in a book of all the coaches that had to play against me. My coach said that they changed the rule that year.
Oh, wow.
Because they said, seriously, like, Washington going to Final Four, big deal. You know, she had a big thing. She was a big part of it. And so you're going to really not give her All-American. And the rules said that you had to play 66% of the game. So now I guess that rule has changed. So my coach came back. He said, hey, you didn't get All-American, but you changed the rule. And I was like, all right, I guess that's fine.
There you go. Serbians coming to America and just changing everything. I love it. I love that. So we talked about a ton of stuff. I could ask you questions all day long. There's so much wealth of information in everything that we talked about. I mean, maybe we can hit up a different topic another time. But What I do want to ask you is move on to some fun things. I had Anya Spasievich on the podcast. And
I love Anya.
God, she's awesome. It's ridiculous. Her husband's sitting there, and those two together, their energy is just, it's rad.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we talked a bunch about you, by the way. But I'm going to ask you some fun questions really quick, and then I'm going to ask you a little bit about what you would do if you would take over this show, just to see what interesting people you would get on here. But here's one. If you had the choice of fighting a horse-sized duck or 100 duck-sized horses, which one would you choose?
Horse-sized duck.
I don't understand this. The horse ducks can fly. The little fly. Are you crazy? What? Think about tons of them coming at you, as opposed to one big.
I mean, I'm pretty tall, big. I mean, I can take a horse, maybe, like instead of like
a horse-sized duck.
Duck.
I mean, how are you gonna get past that beak?
A duck is not gonna like fly that far away. I mean, you know, it's just I get it somehow. But, like, if there are too many of them, it's just too many. They can gang up on me somehow. Like 100? Are you kidding me?
Okay, how about this? Let's give me the main thing. Ooh, I got one. So, not related to sports. Do you know how to drop an egg onto a concrete floor without cracking it?
No, I don't.
Neither do I. I don't know. I was hoping you had the answer to that. I don't understand that question, but somebody's going to have the answer to it. Let's see. Ooh, I got one. Anya had some fun with this one. If you try to fail and succeed, which have you done?
Whoa, wait again?
If you try to fail and succeed, which have you done? One more time.
Try to fail.
If you try to fail and you succeed, which have you done?
I failed.
Awesome. It's all about the way you look at it, you know? But, I mean, I kind of think that if you try to fail and you succeed, then you were successful in failing. And that's always good.
That's one of those glass half full deals.
Yeah, exactly.
But you're a man, I'm a woman, so we look at things a little bit different.
This is true. This is what makes us both so special. So right. Here's where I turn it over to you, and I ask you, if you were giving this podcast and you had one person you would want to get on this show, a great person you could interview and learn a ton of stuff from, just like yourself, who would you bring on and why?
Courtney Thompson.
Ooh, that's a great one. I do have to reach out to her. So you got to make that happen, by the way. And why?
Oh, she is inspiration in each and every way, an amazing human being. And I don't even have to talk about her as a player. But just I think for people that don't know who Courtney is, get a hold of yourself, find out who Courtney is. But Courtney is 5'7", maybe, on a good day.
Yeah,
setter.
On a good day.
From USA national team. She played in 2 Olympics, went to 3 Final Fours in the college, 4 times All-American, Women Honda Award winner in USA. I mean, just you can go on and on and on about her awards, but that's not the reason why I want her on the show. I want her on the show just because she is a prototype of, like, when people say, you know, they doubt you, they look at her and she does not look like anything like a volleyball player. And you're like, really? Like, that's the first people look at her and they say, what? She's a volleyball player? No, she's not just a volleyball player. She's an amazing volleyball player. Like, get it right. So she beat all the odds. She beat all the odds and she's done something that, you know, no person of her size has done in volleyball. So I guess I had a huge honor of playing with her and, you know, just knowing how humble and how funny and how amazing and sincere she is, I would love for her to share her insight. And, you know, I had many conversations with her and I still do, but, you know, people can learn, young girls can learn a lot from her when it comes to, like, you know, not like I was talented. She was not, you know, how did you make it that far without being talented? So
that's
what did
awesome.
You do?
That's a great pick. You know, I mean, I've trained a bunch of times next to her because the USA men and women are together, and her drive is tremendous. And she's also, like, just off the court, you know where the energy is coming from. She's always, if there's laughter, if there's something going on, it's like Courtney's right there in the mix, always.
I have never in my life met a person that did not love to play with Courtney or have Courtney as a setter and they're on her team. Like, I tried so hard on every pro team that I played for, and they needed a setter. I'm like, oh, Courtney Thompson. And they look at me and go like, oh, I don't know, she's short. And I'm like, God, I played with some 6'4" setters that are not as good as Courtney. And I played right back defense, and I got nailed in the face behind them, but I never got hit in the face without behind Courtney. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just – and how many blocks do really setters get in a game?
Yeah.
Like, really? You're going to base it on blocking? Come on now.
Good point. Well, awesome. I'm definitely going to have to look into that. I'll hit up Courtney. Maybe I have to drop your name. And why don't we close out here, because we've given everybody a ton to process. with some way to follow you or connect with you offline or online?
I do have all of those Twitter, Instagram, Facebook accounts. I guess the best way to contact me would be my email. It's sanja@miami.edu. That's S-A-N-J-A @miami.edu. Also, you can find me on Instagram, Sanja Tom. And Twitter, it's Sanja Tomasovic. Tomasovic for my Serbian.
Okay. That's okay. You said it like maybe I said it.
Yeah, I just have to, like, you know, say it so Americans can understand it.
Yeah.
But Sanja Tomasovic.
Awesome. Yeah, and all of that will be in the show notes, by the way, just for everybody. So you'll be able to see those and click through. Is there anything
else? If you guys, if any of these young women, volleyball players, non-volleyball players, want any help, any advice, contact me. Just know that if you're not, if you're younger than a junior in high school, I will not be able to respond to you. So you might have to talk through Ryan or somebody else.
Contact us at Elite Sports Students. Yes.
But yeah, those are the NCAA rules, so I gotta follow those.
Yeah.
Otherwise, contact me, and good luck. Please make smart choices, and remember, there are no little things. Everything you do, it matters.
Listen up, people. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sanja, for being on the podcast today, and for your fantastic advice and sharing some moments and some things that maybe not have been shared before. We really appreciate it. I appreciate you. I'm grateful for everything that you really do for these young kids in volleyball and the inspiration that you are for them. And also me, because there's a ton to be learned from someone who takes big chances and goes after their dreams like you have.
Well, thank you, Ryan. And I think you don't have a problem going after big dreams. I mean, you're doing something pretty special right now. And I'm super excited that to call you my friend, knowing what you're doing in my part of the world and the way you're helping those young women. They're not as fortunate as you were and some American kids are. So,
well, good thank
job.
Thank you very much. Alrighty.
All right. Well, have a good one. Enjoy Belgrade.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you like the show? Leave a rating and review on iTunes or Stitcher.com so others will find us. And share the love. Think of one person that could benefit and send them the link for this episode. For more resources and tips, go to beyondathletic.com or tweet us @beyondathletic. I appreciate and thank you for listening.
What we doing live? Echoes in eternity.
I'm gonna show you how great I am.
And this concludes our Chicago show. Please stay tuned.